Welcome in to the Sports Objective. We appreciate everyone tuning in. Remember, our show can be found pretty much anywhere podcasts are found, including but not limited to Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud, and Spotify. The college baseball season is upon us. Over the last few weeks, we've been catching up with head coaches from around the state. There are, of course, 17 Division I college baseball programs in the state of North Carolina. And we'll split these interviews up into a 4 or 5 part series over the coming days. But on this edition of our NCD1 baseball preview, you'll hear from East Carolina head coach Cliff Godwin, Duke head coach Chris Pollard, North Carolina head coach Scott Forbes, and Wake Forest's ACC Network Plus color analyst and former major league pitcher Larry Sorensen, as we get an in-depth look at those respective programs. Remember, each of those interviews and all of our content can be found on our YouTube channel, where we're about to eclipse 500 subscribers. Be sure to click subscribe and ring that notification bell. But right now, without any further ado, let's go ahead and get things underway and go to our conversation from several days ago with the head coach of the East Carolina Pirates, Cliff Godwin.
Well, as we move around the state of North Carolina, obviously a program we know very well, right, Bubba?
Yeah, very excited right now to catch up with the 8th-year head baseball coach of East Carolina, Cliff Godwin. Coach, welcome back to the show.
Guys, always a pleasure. Appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah, Coach, I know that obviously as a competitor that you are, that you always like to have more time, as we say, but it's hard to believe that baseball season's right around the corner.
It is. It's crazy. You know, it seems that in some capacity that the season just ended a few days ago from last year, and then in some capacity it feels like it's been 2 years since we've played, you know, an opposing opponent in the spring. So, but I'm excited. Our guys are excited, and we just need to stay in that present moment and work each day to get a little bit better.
Coach, let's get right into the roster. Let's start off, you know, talking about behind the plate. And you lose a guy like Seth Cadell, but and then you have a proven commodity, a guy who's played excellent baseball for you, and Ben Newton.
Yeah, I tell people all the time, it's the deepest our catching's ever been here. We got 4 quality options back there. Ben, obviously leading the charge, 5th-year senior, has caught here, has been in our program for 3 years because he's a junior college transfer, super smart, great defender, receiver, blocker, and, you know, solid left-handed stick for sure, and he's continuing to get better offensively. Then you got 3 other guys, 2 freshmen, Ryan McChrystal, Aiden Edwards, who complement each other pretty well. Ryan's probably a little bit more offensive, but has a lot of tools behind the plate. Ryan has an unbelievable arm, probably the best arm that we've ever had here behind the plate. Aiden's probably a little bit in front of him defensively, but not quite the offensive player, but has gotten a lot better offensively. And then a guy that's been in our program who's always had the talent, but now starting to really put things together, is Justin Wilcoxon, who had a great fall for us. And just super excited about the depth that we have back there.
Coach, let's go around the infield. Certainly, we'll start with first base. Can you talk about who's going to be playing there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Josh Mullen, everybody knows that name, and Josh will start there for sure. And he has done a good job. He's really shaped up his body with our strength coach, Dennis Wilson. He is more athletic, leaner, better defender, all those good things. So, and then we have some other guys that can fill in there. You know, AMAC can go over there, CJ Boyd, Jacob Jenkins Cowart, Cam Clonch. So, some different options there at first base.
Coach, you know, you mentioned AMAC with guys like AMAC, and then obviously Zach Agnos, Ryder Giles. You have a lot of interchangeability amongst those infield positions. So if you would, take us around the horn and tell us who's fitting in where.
Well, if we started tomorrow, which we don't, you know, AMAC would play third base, Ryder would play short, Zach would play second. And I say that because Jacob Starling's still coming back from an injury. He hurt his leg in summer baseball and just takes some time. And he's probably 80% healthy and he's doing stuff. It just his leg gets sore here and there. Joey Barini has done an outstanding job, continued to become a better defender. He can play short and second as well. And so those guys can really, CJ Boyd plays a little bit of second base, but, you know, with AMAC and Zach especially, those guys can bounce around a little bit. And Ryder can play anywhere on the infield as well. He's just a really good shortstop. So, you know, if we play tomorrow, Agnes would be at second, AMAC would be at third, and Ryder would be at short. But the thing I like about this team, and before we get into the outfield, is, you know, we have the ability to go really, really offensive at any point in time and really, really defensive at any point in time. So that's a good luxury to have.
Coach, let's move out to the outfield. Can you talk about, I guess we can start with left field, who you have there?
Well, you know, Lane Hoover can play all over, but Lane has played a lot of left field because that's the one corner position he just hadn't played a ton of. Carter Cunningham, who is a junior college transfer, really swung the bat well for us this fall. He's a corner outfielder, either left or right. Bryson, you could see him in right. You could see him in center. Riley Johnson, you could see in center. You could see in right. AMAC obviously can play in the outfield. Cam Plants can play out there. CJ Boyd can play out there. So a lot of different options out there as well.
Yeah, you mentioned Riley Johnson. Obviously, he had some moments a season ago, really swung the bat well at times. And Bryson Wall, you talk about what Bryson did defensively. I guess it was in the regional, and he had some web gems out there in center field. And you talk about Riley being able to play there as well. It's nice to be strong up the middle like that.
Yeah, you got to be strong up the middle if you're going to be good. Bryson, what a lot of people don't realize, last year, once the conference tournament, when we got beat and he went into the wall, Bryson played in a lot of pain, and I'm so proud of him. I don't know if he could have done that his freshman year, and, you know, we never want to put our guys at risk, but he was chomping at the bit. We wouldn't have won the regional if it wasn't for Bryson. I mean, going over the wall against Charlotte and robbing that home run that Austin Knight hit. So he really toughed it out, and he didn't swing the bat great. Obviously, had a big double in the Charlotte game, but he really was having a tough time swinging. He didn't take BP from the time we lost in the conference tournament until day one in the Super Regional. So you're talking about 2 weeks that he didn't even take live arm action because his shoulder hurt so bad. So just so proud of him of what he's done for our program, and I'm excited. I think he's going to have the best year he's ever had this year. Riley Johnson, last year, I think he kind of doubted himself at times when the coaches thought he was a great player. And when Hoover went down, he was kind of thrown into it. And you'd see glimpses of greatness, and then he wouldn't play as consistent. But he had a really good fall for us. And probably if we started tomorrow, he'd be in center field and Bryson would be in right. But it's great that both those guys can play center field at a high level.
And, Coach, last but certainly not least, one of the areas, I think that it seems like the pitching position gets deeper and deeper each year. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I think, you know, we have a lot of depth. Some of it's young depth, but our young pitchers are as talented as any group we've ever had here, and they've done a really good job of just showing up and going to work every day. You know, when you look at who's going to be in the starting rotation, and we talk about we want every guy that takes the ball, whether it be on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday, to be a Friday night starter. I think there's five guys that are kind of leading the charge. You always have a surprise, but the five guys that I would say that are leading the charge are Wisenhunt, of course, Garrett Saylor, Logish, Cooch Manor, and Groves. And those guys also, some of them could also pitch out of the bullpen in some big roles as well. So, you know, we're going to take it early on for sure is, hey, we're going to try to win that first game and do what we need to do and then, you know, figure out next midweek and all that good stuff once we get through the weekend. So, but those five guys have done a really good job, and they offer all different types of pitchers, which is a good thing as well.
Before we talk about some of the relief options, Carson Wisenhunt, he had the opportunity to pitch for USA Baseball. You've had the chance to be involved with USA Baseball as well. So just talk about that experience for him.
It was a great experience for him. We really weren't going to let him go play in the summer just because of the workload he had on the mound. It's the most he's ever pitched in his life. But when you get an opportunity to play with Team USA, it's a no-brainer for me. And they took a really, really good care of him. Coach Avent, him and I were in constant communication, and he just raved about how Carson handled himself, which is always great to hear from one of your players. But you know, we've had four guys in the past 3 years that have been able to play with the collegiate national team, and that's pretty special. So it was definitely a great experience for him.
Coach, we always ask you, as far as we know how much you love the game and this particular case with the college game, is there any hope that we can ever have the option to hire another assistant coach? It's very frustrating to those of us that follow the game and their fans.
I would say this. There's a lot of other things that athletic directors are worried about and the NCAA is worried about, and it's not the third assistant for baseball. Whether I agree with that or not, they're more worried about budgets and Title IX and different issues like that. So I don't see that changing in the near future. The thing I would say is we're able to compensate our, and I hate using the word volunteer. The only part of volunteer is that East Carolina doesn't pay him. It gets paid out of the Cliff Godwin baseball camp. But we've been very fortunate to be able to take care of our volunteers at a high level because of our camp success and the success we've had on the field.
Coach, speaking of your staff, about some of the staff changes that you've undergone since last season.
Wow. I don't know if we've got enough time to talk about it, but, you know, I'll make it pretty simple. I mean, Coach Dietrich got the head coaching job at Cal State Fullerton. What a great opportunity for him, and a place that he worked at, but also grew up going to games with his dad and his brothers. And, you know, it's a tribute to him being a part of our program and helping us continue to get better that he was allowed that opportunity. But the thing that Coach Knight, when he was hired here, you know, a few years ago, he wanted to be a pitching coach. So he was Deets' right-hand man. He was down with the pitchers every day and continued to learn. And it was a no-brainer for me when Coach Deets was named the head coach at Cal State Fullerton to, I mean, Austin Knight. We had head coaches reaching out about that position across the country. And for me, it was a no-brainer for a couple of reasons. Number one, Austin Knight, I've known for a long time, dating back to Ole Miss when he was a catcher for me. And he is as loyal as the day is long. And then he's super knowledgeable about how to develop pitchers and also take care of them from an arm care aspect of it. So that was a no-brainer. And, you know, we hired David Macias, and then he got the first base coaching job for the San Diego Padres here in December. And Austin technically was in that volunteer role still because I wanted him to be at fall practice all the time and not have to go on the road and recruit. So once David left and went with the Padres, I just moved Austin into that second assistant role because he had done such a great job. And, you know, it allowed us to, you know, maneuver some money around. And, you know, Blake Hardegree, who's our director of baseball operations and does a great job, I was able to give him a raise. And Colby Borders is now our volunteer assistant. And then we just hired a new director of player development, Keith Blackman, who was the head baseball coach at Hickory Grove Christian in the Charlotte area. So we have gotten our staff together finally and are ready to rock and roll for the season.
Coach, one of the things that fans are excited about certainly is the upcoming season. And I know the first weekend you start off with, Brian, can you talk a little bit about your schedule?
Yeah, we have, in my opinion, probably the toughest schedule on paper that we've ever had. So we'll have to bring our A game, so to speak, on every given day, or we won't play at the level we want to. But we open up with Bryant. I think we play Campbell midweek. And then we have North Carolina for a three-game series. So we play North Carolina Friday, Saturday in Chapel Hill, and then Sunday here in Greenville. And for all the East Carolina fans that think that Carolina mistreats us, they don't. They're going to come here next year on Friday and Saturday, and we'll play there on Sunday. So Coach Forbes and I have a great working relationship. And then you got the Keith McClair, and I forget who we played in the midweek before the Keith McClair, but the Keith McClair, you have Michigan with Eric Backes and Nick Schnabel. You have Maryland, which was just in our regional, and then Indiana State, who has a great program. And then it just goes from there. We play a lot of quality opponents on the weekend, but your normal midweek foes that are really good, We got Duke home and home, NC State home and home, UNC Wilmington home and home. I think we play Old Dominion in there at some point in time too. So Elon, a lot of great opponents because of where we're located. So it's a really challenging schedule.
Coach, as we wrap this up, I'm going to talk about the banquet, and it is sold out. It sold out in record time this year, and that's not surprising with the success that the program's had. But and just talk about the banquet and who you have coming in as keynote speakers with Clayton McCullough and also Connor Norby.
Yeah, I literally just got a phone with Clayton McCullough. As you guys were calling me, Clayton, one of my best friends, played here at East Carolina. We've known each other since we were in high school. He's now the first base coach for the Los Angeles Dodgers. What a great MLB organization they have right now. They've been very consistent at winning at a high level for the last 2 years, and Clayton's been a huge part of that. So people are excited about hearing him. And then Connor Norby, a guy that was drafted in the second round, 41st pick overall. Norbs is excited to come back and kind of tell his story and, you know, how he – ended up being where he was last year. And I think I just enjoy hearing people talk about all the obstacles that they had to overcome to become the success that they are at any given moment. And I think a lot of times people just don't see the stuff that goes on behind the scenes that was a struggle or was hard. And they just see that this guy signed for, you know, well over $1 million and, you know, how easy it must be for him. And it wasn't easy for Norby. So, excited about that. You hear from a few of our players, and of course we'll get to talk about the program, spend some time with one another, and raise money for the baseball program, which is you know, great for student athletes. A lot of things that we're able to get for them comes from the money we raise at the banquet.
And Coach, before we let you go, quick question. I know that I want to remind fans to get season tickets. You can call 1-800-DIAL-ECU, or you're simply, if you're more of a modern person, you can go to ecupirates.com, get your tickets. Coach, I know that you guys were close to a record for season tickets. Have you passed that, or can you give us an update?
I think we just surpassed it by a few tickets, but what I've told Ryan Robinson and everybody is let's try to get to 2,000. We've never had 2,000 season tickets sold before the first game, so if we could do that, I think we're a couple hundred tickets away. So anybody, buy for birthday presents or for future Christmas presents, whatever, but the more people we can have in this stadium, the better. And that's one thing I'm excited about. From day one, we get to have full capacity. You forget that we didn't have full capacity here until the regionals, which is kind of remarkable, especially at the level our guys showed consistent play on the field. So we're fired up about having Clark LeClair in the Jungle Pack.
Coach, good luck to you this season, and look forward to talking to you later on.
Thank you, guys, and thanks for supporting our baseball program.
Welcome into the Sports Objective. We appreciate everyone tuning in whenever and however you're watching or listening, whether it's Facebook, YouTube, or Twitter. And our show can also be found pretty much anywhere podcasts are found, including Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud, and Spotify. It's hard to believe, but we're less than a month away from the start of the college baseball season. And over the last week, we've had a chance to catch up with 8 of the 17 Division I baseball coaches around the state of North Carolina. And today we're very excited to be joined by a guy who played in this state at Davidson, has been a tremendous coach at 3 different programs now. And welcome back to the show, Duke head baseball coach Chris Pollard. Coach, we appreciate your time.
Bubba, thanks for having me back on.
Absolutely. You know, we have snow on the ground, so that means the season's just around the corner, right, Coach? And you know,
that's right.
Before we dive into this year's club, just talk a little about that 2021 season. 33-22 was your final record. You won the ACC tournament for the first time ever, and then your first ACC baseball title of any kind, if I'm not mistaken, what, in about 60 years?
That's right. Yeah. So it all sounds good, right? 33 wins, an ACC championship, another trip to the NCAA tournament. But I think probably you've heard this from a lot of coaches, don't want to ever have to go through another season like 2021. It was challenging in so many ways, trying to navigate COVID, and it placed a big strain on our players. And I tell people, you know, that the year was really a grind in so many ways. And we were, you know, we were struggling for most of the year. You know, we didn't get hot until early May, and then, you know, went on a terrific run through the end of the regular season into the ACC tournament. But up until that point, had been really up and down throughout the year. And I think a big part of our ups and downs were just dealing with the stress and strain of COVID and being away from family and, you know, all the things that went into making sure last year that you could get through the season. But that's what in my mind makes the ACC championship run so rewarding, is that it was a great way to reward our guys for being resilient. You know, our guys were really resilient to stay in the fight, even when we were struggling and dealing with all the COVID stuff. And, you know, and they stuck together and stayed committed to each other and the program, and had a great run there at the end.
I know here just a little over a week ago, as we're recording this on Monday, the 24th of January, you had an addition to your coaching staff, a guy who's very familiar with the ACC, having played at Notre Dame from 2017 to 2021. He spent the fall in the volunteer role up at NIU. Daniel Jung is your new director of ops.
Yeah, really excited that Danny's joined our program. Yeah, knew him well as a player at Notre Dame. He comes in incredibly highly recommended by Mick Aoki, who recruited him to Notre Dame and coached him his first 3 years there, and then Link Jarrett, who coached him the last 2 years. And, of course, he was a part of that tremendous ACC regular season champion program last year they had. And, you know, he brings a lot of experience in the ACC, terrific on the data and analytics side, young guy with a lot of energy, really hungry to learn. And I think that was the thing, Bubba, that impressed me the most. He's a guy that just has a real love for learning the game. He's a student of the game, and he's a real sponge, and he's already a positive addition. Certainly we wish Chris O'Neill well. Chris did a great job in the year he was with us in that operations role, and moved on, and now he's in a full-time recruiting and hitting coach position at George Washington University. So a great opportunity for him to keep climbing the ladder. I told Danny, you look at the guys that have come to Duke and been in our ops position and what they've gone on to do. Patrick O'Grady's now a scout with the Seattle Mariners. Chris Gordon, of course, who took over for Patrick, is now on our staff as our pitching coach. And, you know, most recently, Chris O'Neill, who moved into a recruiting role at George Washington. It's been a position on our staff that's had a lot of upward mobility. And I have no doubt that Danny will come in here and do a great job for a couple of years and then take that next step up the ladder.
Yeah, as far as Danny's concerned, I'm glad you brought it up as far as the analytic side of the game. Obviously, that's been a growing trend in recent seasons, and I noticed that he had a master's in business analytics from Notre Dame.
Yeah, that was something that jumped out to me too, Bubba. You know, he's got two Notre Dame degrees, and you know, that certainly having a background in the business analytics side. You know, the operations position, you know, you have to have some business savvy. You're essentially, you know, running a budget. You're doing our travel. You're coordinating our meals and buses and hotels and flights. So you're managing a big part of our operating expenses. But at the same time, we wanted somebody in that role who really is passionate about the baseball side of things and can add value from video breakdown to helping us dive deeper into the TrackMan data, Blast and Oculus and all the different technology that we're using nowadays to help these players develop. And Danny certainly is chomping at the bit to dive into that.
Before we dive into your highly touted recruiting class that ranked 10th nationally, and let's talk about what returns. So you have 27 letter winners coming back, including a third team all ACC outfielder, RJ Schreck, who hit 337, 18 bombs and 52 runs driven in.
Yeah, so RJ comes back, starting left fielder, really can stabilize the middle of our lineup, along with Chris Crabtree, who's a guy that I feel like he's been around for about 10 years. Fifth-year senior, had 13 home runs last year. Will Hoyle, who started a good bit at second base, is back as a fifth-year senior as well. And then a guy to really keep your eye on positionally, Graham Pauley, who, you know, I really felt like was a breakout candidate for us last year. Got off to a slow start, kind of worked his way out of the lineup, and then over the last month of the season worked himself back into the lineup and was a really key contributor down the stretch for us as we made that run. Had a great summer, triple crown winner in the Sun Belt Collegiate League, came back, had a terrific fall, and he's a guy that's going to, you know, provide some punch to the lineup as well. So you've got, you know, really four veteran bats that are back, but when you think about experience for us, it really starts on the mound. You know, we had so many guys that are back from that run last year that are seasoned and better for the experience. You've got some of that guy, old guard like Cooper Stinson, who's been a starter in this program since 2019. You've got Matt Dockman and Jimmy Loper, two guys that have been key contributors out of the bullpen for us for the last 3 years. And then Marcus Johnson and Luke Fox, who by the end of the year were the best two pitchers on our staff. And you know, Luke moved into the rotation for us late April last year and pitched great down the stretch, wound up being named a freshman All-American. And Marcus was just unbelievable out of the backside of the bullpen as a stopper, appeared in all four games in the ACC tournament. And we don't get that far if it wasn't for the job that Marcus did out of the bullpen for us. He really held it together for us in a lot of ways. And we had to jump on his back at times last year. But, you know, the plan is for Marcus to move into the rotation. And Luke is obviously back in the rotation. You got a guy like Cooper Stinson, who's a veteran experienced starter. Billy Seidel, a guy that really came on late in the year coming out of Tommy John, is back and has thrown really well. So you add him into that mix. And so we really like the depth of our pitching staff, and we like the experience of our pitching staff as well.
You talk about those guys that you have those high expectations for and are a bit more proven. If you would, you know, who are an arm or two that maybe didn't see a whole lot of mound time a season ago, but could potentially see a significant number of innings this year?
Yeah, great question. So two guys that jump out to me, Adam Boucher, who's got a really big arm, up to 96, 97 miles an hour, really had to work on harnessing it last year, getting back in the zone. Went and had a great summer in the NECBL, was actually, I think, the top pro prospect in the NECBL, and was shut down for the early part of our fall, threw great late in the fall for us, has looked good early on. I think he could be a guy that really jumps into a much bigger role. Another guy to keep your eye on has yet to throw an inning in our program yet, despite being a junior in the classroom. That's Michael Foltz. You know, he hadn't pitched in 2020 when COVID hit, although he probably was working his way really into the mix out of the pen when the pandemic shut that season down. Had an unbelievable fall of 2020. And then sustained an injury and missed all of the spring of 21 and missed a good chunk of this fall as well, but has looked terrific coming out of the winter break. And he's a left-hander that can really spin it. It's got two distinct breaking balls that can both produce a swing and a miss. So that's another guy to keep an eye on out of our pen.
A few minutes ago, I referenced that excellent recruiting class. You have 16 guys coming in, 12 from the high school ranks, and then four grad transfers. If you would, start off with those four grad transfers that are entering your program.
Yeah, you know, John Natoli was the preseason Ivy League pitcher of the year in 2020. Actually pitched against us early in 2020. A lot of people probably forget about it because of the pandemic, but we played Cornell two weekends before the regular season got shut down. And he was actually a starter on that Cornell team in 2020, pitched five shutout innings against us on that Sunday, was committed to come play with us last year, and then had Tommy John. So essentially took a gap year to rehab, worked out at Eric Cressy's place down in Florida all last year. Had a great fall, throws a ton of strikes, really, really good changeup. He's a guy that can really factor into the mix for us as well. Trevor Johnson was the number one pro prospect in the Ivy Leagues 3 or 4 years ago, and then between COVID and some injuries, just hadn't had really any time on the field. And you could tell that when he got here this fall, had a lot of rust to work off, and has really done so. And really has looked good here in the preseason for us, hitting the ball with more power, moving good. He's in really good shape physically. Chris Davis is a name to keep keep an eye on. Guy that was with us last year, but has an opportunity to play maybe a bigger role this year with some graduation and some guys moving on to the draft in the outfield. Guy that plays with tremendous energy, brings that contagious energy to the ballpark with him every single day. And then a guy that's, you know, familiar to local college baseball fans, Caleb McCroy, who had a great career at North Carolina Central. Left-handed pitcher who pitched out of the bullpen for them. Really, really electric stuff. You know, he came in and pitched against us last year in 2021 at the DBAP. Struck out the side. He's really tough on left-handers, kind of has a crossfire delivery. And he's a guy that can really factor in for us out of the pen as well.
On the high school side of things, which of those young men, have an opportunity to potentially get on the field early?
Yeah, a bunch of them, Bubba. I tell you, you look at the lineup that we put out there on the field this fall against Davidson and NC State in our two fall exhibitions. You know, we had four freshmen on the field at the same time. If you count Luke Storm, who was a redshirt last year and is a redshirt freshman this year and had a tremendous fall and could be a real breakout candidate for us. Certainly Alex Mooney comes in with a lot of, height from his high school career, really good defender, can run, handles the bat well, has surprising power for his size. He's just a really skilled player and plays with a lot of confidence and plays with an edge. And he's done a great job, had a great fall, actually had an OPS over 1,000 for the fall. Jonathan Santucci, who's a two-way player out of Massachusetts, left-handed pitcher, was up to 95 this fall. He's going to factor in for us on the mound and certainly competing for a starting job in the outfield. Has some real power in the bat, has some of the best bat speed on the team. So just tremendous physical tools. Devin Obey is also an outfielder out of Nashville, Tennessee. Really athletic, has tremendous raw power. Got to cut down on the swing and miss a little bit, but he's a guy that can factor in for us this spring. And then another player out of Nashville, catcher Andrew Yu. He has really, really good defensive skills and certainly is pushing for time behind the plate this year, even as a true freshman.
Lastly, let's take a look at your schedule. Obviously, you have the always challenging ACC, and I want you to talk about who you have coming to Durham. But of the non-conference slate, that early season, I think it's week two, going to Baylor for three games against a Big 12 foe, jumped out.
Yeah, Baylor's going to be really good, and we need that trip, Bubba. I mean, we've got to challenge ourselves a little bit there early in the non-conference, especially on the weekend, to get ready for ACC play. You know, as far as coming to Durham to play us in the ACC, I think UVA and Carolina travel into Durham this year. Notre Dame is another one that will travel in and play us here. We've got Miami at home as well. The league's going to be stacked as usual. I look for Florida State, to be in a lot of preseason publications, the team to beat in our league. They've just got tremendous pitching back. They're a very deep pitching staff with a tremendous 1-2 punch at the top of their rotation with Parker Messick and Bryce Hubbard. So, NC State's another team that we play at home that's certainly very, very talented. They're going to be a little different this year because they're a little younger positionally, but they're a little more experienced on the mound, kind of like us. But they look very good when we had the exhibition against them at the DBAP this fall. And our non-conference is just grueling. Two games with East Carolina, was in some publications, a top 10 team in the country. two games with Liberty, who's a top 25 team in a lot of publications. Campbell University's getting a lot of recognition as a fringy top 25 program. So there's six games right there in the non-conference that are just grueling in the midweek. And we're going to have to be good at getting off the mat, Bubba, because you play an ACC slate that beat you up already, and then you got teams like ECU and Campbell and Liberty in the midweek. There's not a lot of time to catch your breath. And so, you know, you're going to take some gut punches along the way, but you got to be good at getting up off the mat and continuing to move forward. And fortunately for us, I think we've got tremendous leadership this year, and I think we'll be good at that.
With all the excellent programs throughout the region, definitely very easy to schedule well, I would imagine.
Yeah, that's too well, you know, yeah, too well. As I look at our schedule this year, I'm like, good gravy. We could have softened it just a little bit. But, hey, that's what you do this for. You know, it's a lot of fun. And every weekend and every week in the midweek, you're playing somebody that can beat you, and you got to play well.
Well, Coach, we really appreciate your time this morning. Best of luck this season. We look forward to having you back on the program down the road.
Great to catch up with you, Bubba. Look forward to talking again throughout the course of the season.
Tuning in whenever and however you're watching, whether it's Facebook Live, YouTube, or Twitter. And our show can also be found in audio only or podcast form pretty much everywhere podcasts are found, including Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud, and Spotify. It's hard to believe, but we're less than a month away from the start of the college baseball season. Exactly 4 weeks from today will be opening day. And right now we're very excited to be joined by the second year head coach of the North Carolina Tar Heels, Scott Forbes. Coach, we appreciate your time this morning.
Great to be on. I appreciate you having me this morning.
Absolutely. Last year, first year at the helm, taking over for your mentor, Mike Fox. So just, before we dive into this year's club, give us a glimpse back at 2021 and some of the things you learned in your first season as head coach.
Wow. I can't even begin to start with what I've learned. That first year, everybody says you probably learned the most in that first year, and I would definitely have to agree with that. And then throw COVID on top of that, just having to navigate those waters and all the testing and the schedule changes, the travel changes. But I tell you, it was a challenge, but it was a lot of fun. I learned a ton, had a blast. The kids had not been able to play for a year, so they were excited just to be out here, and they were, that group we had last year gave it their all. We were really young, but for them to somehow finish sixth in the ACC and get in the postseason, I thought was a credit to them. And, I really enjoyed it. Always wanted to be a head coach, and until you do something, you haven't done it. So I'd say the biggest thing, I did learn was, at the end of the day, you have to make the final call. So getting used to that, but not just the final call on the field, things off the field and administratively, all that good stuff. But I had a blast.
Now, Coach, this next question, I know we could be here all day for you answering this, but, it kind of summarized, since this is the first time we've had you on the show,
some of the things that you learned from Mike Fox and, you know, those two or three things that you really took with you from all those years spent with Coach?
Yeah, no doubt. I was lucky to play for Coach, you know, way back at North Carolina Wesleyan, and then came with him here in 1998. His first season was 1999 as a volunteer assistant. And, you know, what people don't realize that didn't follow North Carolina Wesleyan way back is, you know, he had created a really Division III powerhouse there. I was fortunate to play in the Division III World Series. So I just saw, you know, at a young age, kind of what it took to run an organization, and how organized and disciplined Coach was, and how that carried over into to us as players and the program. And then I'd say the second thing besides the organization of the overall program is just the accountability factor that Coach always held with us as players. You know, that really helps when you're at a young age understanding what that means, and how if you can learn to be accountable and learn to have that discipline, it's going to carry over not just in your baseball life, but in your life after baseball.
Now, looking at this year's roster, you referenced how young last year's team was. I know you have 27 letter winners returning. Talk about some of those key pieces you have back from a season ago.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, we played four or five true freshmen. There's a difference between a true freshman and a COVID freshman last year. So those guys are back. You know, we had a catcher, Tomas Frick, that caught every day. Matt Horvath played third base pretty much every day. Danny Ciretti is back, who, you know, missed the 20 season, but big-time prospect that decided to come back and play another year at UNC, and he could have signed, as well as Angel Zarate, one of the better players in the conference. Johnny Castagnazzi played a lot for us last year, had a lot of at-bats, as well as Kobe Wilkerson, you know, got some time in there. So it's a group that went through the vigorous ACC schedule, you know, and it was a harder schedule than we normally play just because we added those two extra weekends in the ACC. And we returned all of our pitchers, and we had some injuries, and Max Carlson had seven starts for us, six of those in the ACC, and then he went down, but he's back and he's full go. We lost our workhorse, Austin Love, but all of our pitchers that pitched for us last year, we really struggled in the starting category, but all those relievers that pitched about every day for us are back. And, you know, we added some new guys that I feel like can help us improve in that area.
And Coach, here in a few minutes, we'll dive into some of those new pieces, because I know you brought a considerable amount into the program, both from the high school ranks as well as some of the transfer portal slash JUCO ranks. But as far as guys that return, you talk about some of the guys who were key contributors a season ago, but you know, throughout the fall and the early stages here of the preseason, who's a returner or two that you know, may surprise some folks that maybe we didn't hear a lot from a season ago?
Yeah, you know, I would say the two that stand out on the mound for us, I mean, the Nick Pryes, the Gage Gillians, the Caden O'Briens, they pitched a ton for us. So they're back and they've improved, you know, which is awesome, because you have to have constant improvement at this level, or somebody new will come in and get you, or somebody somewhere else is going to be better than you. But I would say two returners that have looked really good for us on the mound have been Davis Palermo and Kyle Mott. And Kyle Mott, you know, was probably our best pitcher the 2020 season. And then COVID hit, and he just couldn't regain that form last year. Never got back to where he was, and he's looked really good so far. You know, so if he can come back and get back to like he was in 2020, that would be a big bonus for us. And Davis Palermo is just, you know, he's a program guy that's from right here at Northwood High School that has improved, and his velocity's taken a really, really big jump. But it's not just the velocity. He's in the zone a lot more, but he does have power stuff, you know, up the 98 out of the bullpen, which if it's in the zone, you know, can be pretty tough on opposing hitters.
Transitioning over, talking about the 2021 class that arrived on campus back in the fall, you have a tremendous product out of Walter State College, Osuna, National Junior College Athletic Association Player of the Year, batted well over 450 with 25 bombs and over 100 RBIs in 68 games, which is just amazing. And then you have a very solid left-handed arm coming from the JUCO ranks as well.
Yeah, both those guys have been, you know, you're not sure because with COVID you weren't able to get out and see as much. We've had some success at Walter State with Coach Wersbicki's on our staff, Cody Stubbs, you know, and Gage Gill. We've had a lot of good ones from Walter State. And, you know, Alberto had played with Tomas Frick some growing up, and Frick had told us he's always been a hitter. And we got lucky we got him. You know, he didn't end up signing professionally, and he has as much raw power as any player I've ever coached here, probably besides Aaron Sabato, and he's an unbelievable kid with an unbelievable work ethic. So he's made himself into what he is. He's a pretty daggum good hitter. He's not just a power hitter. So, you know, I think he's got a chance to settle in somewhere in the middle of our order, 4, 5, 6. And Schaefer has been honestly better than I thought he was going to be. I didn't realize he was going to be – I thought he was going to be more 85, 87 with just unbelievable command, but he's had a velo jump and he's got a great body and frame. So, you know, I think he's got a chance to pitch for us on the weekend.
Now, the Division I transfers, and you have a young man coming in from Coastal Carolina as well as Siena. Talk about those two and then highlight some of the high school guys you have arriving on campus.
Yeah, Shadden Peavy House comes from Coastal Carolina. He ended the year as their Friday starter last year. He's got a big arm. He was a shortstop going into Coastal, so he's still kind of new to pitching, but he's going to pitch for us. I don't know if he's going to be the starter out of the pen, but he's got high-end stuff, and I really think his best pitching is ahead of him. Hopefully it'll be this year, a lot of his best pitching, but he's one of those guys when he gets into pro ball, you might look up on TV in 4 or 5 years and see him, you know, in the big leagues. He's got that type of ability and athleticism. And then Connor Beauvais from Siena, you know, he was their conference pitcher of the year, averaged over 12 strikeouts a game. He's got a good arm. He's got 4 pitches. He went up to the Cape this summer. So he's got a chance to fight for us for that Sunday role and make an impact right away. He's going to pitch. It's just a matter of what role. And I really like our class. You know, they meet some needs for us. We needed some more left-handed hitters. We wanted a little more athleticism and speed because we lost 2 guys that could run, 1 that could really run in Justice Thompson. And Vance Honeycutt is probably the one that sticks out the most. An in-state kid that really just took a jump, multi-sport athlete, quarterback, state champion in football. And just one of those great stories where he played multiple sports and now he's zeroing in just on baseball. And he's got a chance to play every day for us and play center field or right field. We basically have 2 center fielders in him and Zarate. And we got some good left-handed hitters. And Casey Cook, Joe Jukonski, Reese Holbrook. Give us some versatility, and it also pushes these guys that are returning.
Final thing I have for you, Coach, you take a look at this year's schedule. Early on, you get to play 11 out of 12 there at Bochimer Stadium. You have a unique 3-game series with East Carolina, 2 there at the Bosch, and then 1 down in Greenville at Clark LeClair Stadium. And then you have a 3-game series there at Bochimer Stadium with Coastal Carolina. And then, obviously, the ACC is always challenging. You have 10 out of the 14 teams in the preseason polls.
Yeah, I tell you what, you know, our schedule is always really good. And college baseball, as you know, just keeps improving, and that's a credit to our game. There are no teams that are, you know, you're just going to walk in and win. So our state is unbelievable. I'm excited. Cliff and I go way back, and we have a lot of respect for one another. We're both North Carolina guys, and we think it's great for our state to play each other. The neutral game fell through at the Pro Park, so we just said we'll do 2 here this year, 2 there next year. We hope to continue to do that as long as him and I are both in the positions we're in. And, you know, the ACC is the ACC. It continues to only get better. I look back last year, even the teams that didn't get in, you know, at one point, I think 3 of them were in the top 25. But I am excited about having all the games here. Last year, we played more games on the road than we ever have. And we never had 2 weekends in a row, just a weird year scheduling. which can be difficult. You know, you get a big home series win, and then next thing you know, you're right on the road. That's kind of how you can get on a little bit of a roll, because it's so hard to win on the road in our league.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And, well, Coach, I really appreciate you being so generous with your time this morning. I appreciate you coming on the show for the initial time, and we look forward to having you back on down the road to talk college baseball.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. Hopefully we'll get through this cold spell and get some baseball weather.
Everyone, I hope everyone is having an excellent weekend. Appreciate you tuning in to the Sports Objective right now via Facebook Live, YouTube, and Twitter, or if you're going back and watching this archived on any of those platforms. Or you can, of course, always find our show pretty much anywhere podcasts are found, including but not limited to Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud, and Spotify. We're continuing on with our NCD1 baseball preview. We've caught up with 13 head coaches from around the state of North Carolina. And right now we're very excited to preview the Wake Forest Demon Deacons as we welcome back to the show their analyst on the ACC Network Plus. And that is, of course, Larry Sorensen. Larry, we appreciate your time this afternoon.
Well, always happy to talk baseball. And I love that music. It gets the blood going a little bit. Less than 2 weeks away now. Let's get after it.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, we're here, like you said, under 2 weeks to first pitch as Wake Forest. And we'll have, as we were just discussing a moment ago, Lafayette as well as Georgetown and also Virginia Commonwealth on the VCU Rams coming in on opening weekend to Winston-Salem and to, I guess, is David Couch Ballpark now.
David Couch Ballpark, absolutely right. The couch is what the players call it. And the players spend a lot of time there. They redid the locker room and the facility a couple of years ago, put about $12 million into it. And so it's got the players lounge, fabulous locker room, rates with any major league locker room that I've been around. Got a nutrition center and indoor facilities that the players use. It's a really nice place to hang out.
Until I was preparing for this interview, I was not aware of that renaming of the facility.
Yeah, it's really something special, and the Herd Performance Center as well. So they got some of the alumni to really get behind it. And Wake Forest itself has undergone tremendous changes with the athletic facilities, with the Sutton Performance Center and McCreary and the facilities that they've got with the indoor facility for football. And I think it's paid off. You've seen that the football team and the basketball team have had record-setting years. And baseball's hoping to jump on that bandwagon as well. They're really excited. The student body has gotten behind the athletic program much more than in past years. And so they're anxious to get baseball going too.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, this baseball program has had so much success under Coach Walter. Last year, though, you know, pretty surprising, a 20-27 overall mark. So before we dive into this year's club, you know, tell us about kind of what happened and the way 2021 went. And what were some of those reasons the Demon Deacons had that surprising losing record?
You know, last year was just really bizarre. It started off losing 2 out of 3 to Notre Dame and then down to Miami, where they didn't even have enough players to finish the series. They only played 2 games and had to call off Sunday's game because they said they just didn't have enough arms left. because of injury situations and disease and so on and so forth. So it got off to a bad start, losing 4-5, and never really came back from there. Hit 91 home runs, the most of any team in Division One in the Power Five conferences in the regular season, but did not make the conference postseason tournament, which is really unbelievable. Had trouble throwing strikes, had trouble catching the ball, was really the basis of the problem.
So as we turn toward 2022, and just tell us some of those key pieces of the roster, what returns, and then we'll get into maybe some of the new additions that can make an impact here early on.
Well, I think as much as anything else, it's going to be a young team on the pitching staff in particular, a couple of sophomores and a freshman probably in the starting rotation to start things off. But when you look at the club, you look at Brock Wilkin, the third baseman that was named prospect in the Cape League last summer as a sophomore, had a terrific year, 17 home runs, 44 RBIs, hit about 280, but really a terrific looking player. Rated as, I think, the number two prospect in the country for the 2023 draft. And just a terrific kid, has really taken on a leadership role this year, really looking to improve himself all the time. Came in as a freshman, had a little trouble coming in on balls, just wasn't quite used to the speed of the ACC. And it took about 3 weeks or so and a couple of mistakes, but then all of a sudden it was like a light switch flipped. And all of a sudden, he started coming in aggressively, and he picks up on his mistakes. He makes adjustments. Third baseman, I think he's going to have a fantastic year for Wake. Michael Turconi is going to play shortstop. He had some arm problems last year, which led to some defensive problems. He had a lot of trouble throwing. He spent some time injured and DH'd, but he'll be at shortstop anchoring the infield. And he's one of the veteran guys. He's got a little bit more time in, so that'll be one of your leaders as well on the infield. Left side looks pretty solid. Second baseman is a young man that that came in the fall as a freshman named Danny Corona, who was a draft pick and would have been a higher draft pick, but kind of indicated that he was going to college. Looks like he's going to nail down the second base spot, and he's just one of those kids. You know, the scout in me comes out and the former player in me comes out when you watch him move and you say, this is a kid that really has a chance to be something special in the years that he spends. He just carries himself like an athlete. Really can swing it, probably switch over to shortstop next year, but a naturally gifted, talented athlete and somebody to really keep an eye on. So those are in the infield. First base is going to be a dogfight to see who's going to play there. They've got some guys to replace Bobby Seymour, who took his 21 home runs and went off to play pro ball. But there will be some competition at first base, and that'll be fun to watch till they get it sorted out. And the big thing, Bubba, they've got to get it sorted out in a hurry because they start off. They jump right into the fray. They've got Florida State, Georgia Tech, and then Virginia, the first three ACC weekends. So the team that's picked first in the Atlantic, the team that's picked first in the Coastal, and the team that's picked second in the Coastal are their first three weekends of the season in ACC play.
Yeah, a very difficult start for the Demon Deacons, and we'll talk a little bit more about the schedule later on, but before we do that, you gave us a great look at the infield, and you shift out to the outfield and, continue to tell us about things positionally before we dive into the pitching staff.
Yeah, in the outfield, a freshman last year, Lucas Castello was terrific. He hit about 280, but played really solid defense in kind of an unspectacular way. And then you realized all of a sudden he was in a position you didn't expect him to be. You just didn't realize he got there that quick. So he had a great year freshman. He'll be back, anchor it down in center field. Left field looks like Adam Cesari is a big, strong left-handed, got some outfield power, hits a lot of Bobby Seymour did. He hits that gap in left center field. The ball jumps off his bat, and of course, it's a little bit of a short port in right. He weighs about 285 or so, lost some weight, actually trimmed down, reshaped his body, working with Mark Seaver, the strength and fitness coordinator, and reshaped his body a little bit. So it looks like he's got the inside track on left, and then right field will be kind of a mix and match a little bit. Pierce Bennett might get some time at second base or right field, and they've got some youngsters that are going to see some time. And right field is like first base, looks like right now. Let's put some different guys out there, give them different opportunities, and see who comes out and wins the job.
Now let's take a look at the pitching staff. What returns as far as the weekend rotation, and how's that shaping up here less than 2 weeks from first pitch?
Well, last year, They had 11 guys out of the 17 guys on the staff that they said threw 95 or better, which is just phenomenal. It's unbelievable. Problem was they were hitting that dura hole back by the stop sometimes, and the control issues were a little bit of a problem for the staff last year. New pitch coach this year, Chris Scarra, comes in, and he'll be focusing a little bit more in all around to a defense, and throwing more strike is going to be the focus of this year's team. Defensively, Wake had a tough year last year. They walked too many people last year. The idea is get the ball to the plate, trust your fielders a little bit more. Two sophomores and a freshman. Rhett Lauder will probably be the Friday night starter. He moved into that spot as a freshman last year. Kid that's got terrific off-speed stuff. Fell in love with his changeup a little bit in fastball counts. And, of course, in the ACC, that word gets around pretty quick. And guys started selling it. But he's got a lot. He'll get up to 93 to 95 with really good command of his off-speed stuff. Teddy McGraw is going to be behind him either Friday, either Saturday or Sunday, depending. They may mix in the left-hander in between two right-handers. But Teddy McGraw is a kid that can get up to 99 or so with a power slider, about 2,900 RPMs on his slider. So good, hard, tight spin. Command issues were a little bit of a problem for him last year, but he had a good summer and looks like he's going to settle into one of the starting roles. And then the young man from Reagan High School in Winston-Salem that committed early, in fact, told the draft people to stay away from him, a left-hander, about 6'3", 210 pounds, Josh Hartle, who would have been a number one draft pick, had a very high number that he was going to ask for in the draft, and finally said, don't bother drafting me, and enrolled in the summer. So he'll probably take up the third spot, whether he goes Saturday or Sunday, depending on how they set the rotation, right, left, right, or if they go right, right, left. But three terrific arms, young though. They're going to be very young in the starting rotation. Eric Adler, All-American, preseason All-American out of the bullpen, comfortable at 95, very comfortable at 95. Good breaking stuff as well. He'll be the closer. Cam Manassi and Brendan Oxford will be setting him up. Oxford from the left side, Manassi from the right side. And they both have power arms as well. You know, they've got that pitching lab that Wake Forest has that was one of the newest labs in the country about 4 years ago when they developed it. And they hang their hat on it. They study the movement. They increase players and develop pitchers. And that's one of the things they hang their hat on. So that's kind of the top seven or so, six or seven guys on the pitching staff, but power arms all the way around.
Yeah, definitely sounds like it. You know, beyond those guys, I don't know how much you've had the chance to dive into it, but just tell us beyond that top six or seven, exactly how much depth they have. You know, you referenced what they had a season ago, but you know, obviously with the five game weeks, you got to have you know, several starters that you feel good about, and then also just arms that you can run out there so you don't use your top relief guys, save them for the weekend.
Yeah, they've got a Seth Keener, a young man from Pilot Mountain. Looks like he's coming along very nicely. Muscolo is another young man that Reed Muscolo is a young man whose brother had also played at Wake, and he's got some potential to start. Keener maybe a little bit more out of the bullpen. And then the freshman, you know, who knows? Hartle is certainly going to be the star and the guy that everybody's going to be focused on when he comes in. Because he's the guy that had the 25 to 28 scouts at every high school game that he pitched. And they're expecting a lot of innings out of him at a very early age. And Lauder is another young man that should be soaking up the innings as well.
You know, going back to things positionally, you've referenced just a moment ago some of the freshmen. Are there any freshmen positionally that you see factoring into the equation and getting significant innings?
You know, Bubba, catcher is going to be a really interesting spot. Brendan Tinsman is back as a junior, and he's done a lot of catching his first couple of years, but he's also had a lot of injuries, broken bone in his hand, had a hamate bone removed. He's just had some trouble staying healthy. And he probably will be their number one guy starting out. But there's a couple of Frenchmen, Chris Katz and Gio Cueto, that they brought in two freshman catchers. And they should probably see an awful lot of time, too. Katz might see some outfield time. Wilken could see some time behind home plate as well. He's got the capability to go behind home plate. So a lot of it, those preseason games for Wake Forest this year are going to be really important because they're young. They're going to have to find some guys that can come in and contribute. Last year, maybe a little bit of junioritis. They had a lot of guys that, because of the five-round draft, some guys weren't drafted 2 years ago and back for another year and really were focused on the draft, maybe a little bit more than playing the game, and it cost them just a little bit. So I think that this year you're going to see some young, hungry players and a lot of competition for spots. And when you got competition for spots, you got guys that are really going all out to try to get some playing time.
One of the things that really stood out to me about Wake Forest's schedule, we referenced opening weekend, you have Lafayette, Georgetown, and VCU, and then you have a midweek game against UNCG, who should be pretty challenging under third-year head coach Billy Godwin. But with the exception of the four-game series against New Jersey Tech, the weekend non-conference games are pretty much single games. And for instance, on that first weekend of March, you also have UMass Lowell, Central Michigan, and Coastal Carolina. So just talk about that rather than playing series in those non-conference weekends.
Well, one of the things that Tom Walter really tries to do is he tries to play everybody in the state. And the state has such great baseball. You look at Coastal, you look at ECU, you look at some of the schools in Charlotte, Greensboro. You know, all those cities have terrific programs and schools have terrific programs, Western Carolina. So he really is a big believer in trying to give everybody in the state a chance to play and play a couple games at a neutral location as well, so that people that don't always have a college playing that caliber of baseball can see some better baseball and see some really good teams come in and play. So they'll play a lot of the local schools and kind of share it, take that ACC flavor to some of the other locales and let everybody have a chance. And because the competition is so good, sometimes you pay the price a little bit with your one loss record, but you also have to help that RPI at the end of the year.
Yeah, you talk about the you mentioned earlier some of the ACC series that the Demon Deacons have on the docket. You have the likes of Florida State and Virginia coming to Winston-Salem. You also have Duke, who's been so good under Chris Pollard. Always enjoy our chat with him. He's done unprecedented things, to say the least, with that Blue Devils program.
You know, the programs are really very similar. The schools are very similar with what they have to do, the way they have to recruit, because the academic standards are so difficult to get into there. And then the tuition is a whole different thing. You know, you think about giving a kid the minimum quarter ride of a scholarship. Well, 25% of the $20,000 it costs you to go to North Carolina State is a lot different than 25% of the $80,000 it costs you to go to Duke or Winston or to Wake Forest. So you're recruiting a different kind of kid, and they take the academics very seriously. They take the graduation rates extremely seriously at Wake Forest. They had 11 programs last year that graduated 100% of their kids within 6 years. They've got some terrific grad programs. And this year, Wake Forest will have 12 freshmen come in and 7 transfers, which is a little bit unusual. But they're transferring from people from places like Harvard and from Stanford and Michigan and schools like that. So you're seeing an awful lot of kids that play at elite academic schools that are transferring in as well.
Yeah, you bring up an interesting topic. That's actually something I had not planned on discussing. We have discussed it with a lot of the head coaches we've had on. But since you've had those conversations with Coach Walter at Wake Forest, you know, just generally speaking, and then specifically regarding Wake, you know, what are his thoughts? I'm sure you've probably discussed it about the transfer portal.
You know, it's changed, but you still have to get him into the school. And that's why you'll see kids generally speaking from schools of higher levels of academia that are transferring in, because Wake doesn't play games. They don't have, they aren't sliding a lot of people in through the back door to get in academically. And like I said, they believe if you come to Wake Forest, you're going to graduate. And when you list the things of importance to Tom Walter, going to Omaha is usually about third or fourth on his list of their priorities when they bring kids in. So, you know, it's a terrific academic school, very family oriented. and they like to have the legacies and everything else. But if you come, you better be ready to hit the books because you're not going to slide by.
As we know, the ACC is always so challenging. Depending on the polls, there's so many college baseball polls, and there's about five or six that you typically see, you know, such as D1 baseball, collegiate baseball, Baseball America, et cetera. But in order for the Demon Deacons to, you know, get back to where they had been in previous seasons prior to last year, just what are, you know, two or three things that you're really going to have to see improvement from if that's going to happen?
I think defense is the first thing that they have to improve on, and I think that it can be done. Last year, it seemed like some players were taking their bats out to the field with them, and the concentration levels weren't always there defensively that you expect them to be. I think there's a different kind of leadership this year, and I think that a lot of it comes on the defensive side of the baseball. I think that's going to make a difference. I think people are going to be rejuvenated a little bit by the approach Corey Muscola is going to bring to the pitching staff. John Hendricks did a terrific job, but had more of a professional approach to it and wasn't quite as familiar with the pitching lab and all the numerics that go along with and the metrics that go along with college baseball and professional baseball these days. And I think that you'll see some of the players will buy into that cheer. So I think there's plenty of room for improvement. It starts on the mound, as always, and that starts with throwing more strikes.
You referenced the excellent pitching lab Wake Forest had, and you just used that word metrics, and so many analytics and metrics used in baseball, increasingly so as the years go on. And I know you have the opportunity to work with PitchLogic.com. So before we wrap this up, I wanted you to talk about PitchLogic.com and plug the work they do.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it. Yeah, F5 Sports. I stole a title from Joe Torre. I'm the chief baseball officer. He gave me a card once, and I saw that, and I had to steal that from him. But it's just it's a baseball, actually, that has a circuit board inside with a number of sensors surrounded by polyurethane and major league leather. But it gives you all the spin data, total spin, backspin, side spin, rifle spin, along with arm slot spin direction. So all your RPMs, your spin efficiency. You can do 3D tunneling to compare fastball, slider, curveball, changeup. You can compare five pitches and see the different looks of everything that you have. And actually, you can, as you're using it and throwing the baseball, and it's all the same major league specs of the Major League Baseball, you can catch all the information you get from the different technology that's out there, wrapped up in a baseball for about $300 at retail. So I appreciate it. PitchLogic.com. Check it out. It's really a phenomenal product. And Wake Forest uses it pretty extensively, as a matter of fact. And we've got a number of colleges around the country that are using it as well as every professional organization is using it in one shape or another.
I know a lot of programs, like you kind of just referenced, I know the Charlotte 49ers do it.
Oh, man.
And other programs that do not come to mind right away. But I've seen, separate Twitter accounts from their official baseball account specifically for those metrics, you know, exit velocity off the bat and so forth. Yeah. Obviously, the radar gun is something that always, you know, entertains the fans when they attend a game. And now they can do so via social media with, you know, they'll post the replay of a home run and talk about the exit velocities.
Yeah, it's interesting and it has changed, but the bottom line is you still have to go out and play the game of baseball. And I think that that's one of the things that that we're realizing is you can't just say, I throw 99, so I'll be successful, because it just doesn't work that way. And I had a coach say to me the other day that, these metrics are going to make pitching coaches obsolete. And I think exactly the opposite. I think they're going to make them even more important, because to have a guy that could combine the understanding and the knowledge of the metrics, how to incorporate those metrics and all that information into making the changes, is really just a way of backing up the same things pitching coaches have been doing for years, teaching you the feel of how to throw your slider and how your slider is better one way or another. Now we've just got the hard data to back up what the eyeballs see and what the pitcher and the pitching coach feel in their gut. And then the other thing is the pitching coach has to be the mom, dad, priest, rabbi, whatever, to send a kid out there every night to get ready to perform. And sometimes it's a pat on the butt, and sometimes it's a kick in the butt. And you've got to understand your pitcher well enough to know what he needs before he goes out there. Because the bottom line is, you've got to go out there and you've got to perform every single time you get the chance. And you can't worry about your exit velocity before you've got exit velocity. You can't worry about the radar gun before you get that ball over home plate.
No doubt about it. It's something that, you know, folks, especially, you know, student athletes can get overly consumed with, as you say. They have to keep the main thing, and, you know, not stray away from those fundamentals and things that make you successful, like you just said. But really appreciate your time this afternoon. Always enjoy our chat, and, you know, we'll definitely love to have you back as we move throughout the season. You're going to be obviously seeing the majority, if not all, of these ACC clubs when they play Wake Forest. And so we'll have you back throughout the season a time or two to talk some baseball specifically as it pertains to the ACC.
Glad to do it. Thank you for the opportunity to talk about it. And if you ever get up to the couch, come on, stop in and see us in the broadcast booth. My partner Stan Cotton and I do football together as well, so we have a lot of fun. Believe the game should be fun. College athletics is just so great that it's a lot of fun to be around.
Definitely will do that. I look forward to meeting in person. And now, before we get out of here, and, you know, if you have not seen our NCD1 baseball preview interviews up to this point, definitely check those out. And they can be found pretty much anywhere podcasts are found. Also, YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. All you have to do is go to our YouTube channel, subscribe, and then, you know, we have a playlist. We make it easy for you. We give you that easy button to access all 17 of these interviews, and we've had 14 thus far, and we'll be catching up with Elon head coach Mike Kennedy, the longest tenured head coach in the state of North Carolina, also Western Carolina's Bobby Miranda, and then we'll chat with Corey Smith, who's from Pack Pride, about the NC State Wolfpack, and then also here in the next day or two, we'll have a drop from our YouTube channel about Mike Rooney from D1 Baseball joining us to just break down not only East Carolina, the ACC, but just the nation as a whole. So that's always great. Really enjoy our conversations with Mike Rooney. But for Larry Sorensen, I'm Bubba Rosenbaum, and you have been watching and listening to the Sports Objective and specifically the NCD1 Baseball Preview. Have a great weekend, everyone. Take care.